My name is Amber. I'm the owner of Draft Up. That's draft-up.com. I was in the shower the other day and I have shampoo all in my hair and it's half ready to drip into my eyes. And then I couldn't find the shampoo. So I go blindly wandering with my hands around the shower looking for the shampoo bottle. And I grabbed a bottle and, you know, I mean, remember in my hair is the shampoo. So I'm kind of keeping my eyes kind of tightly closed because I don't want it to drip into my eyes, but I got to take a peek. So I take a peek and I very instinctively looked down the bottle about 3/4 of the way down for the word shampoo or conditioner or hair removal material or whatever it is that the bottle that I grabbed had, you know. And it caused me to think a little bit about, you know, labels. So on labels, they're actually regulated. They're regulated as far as by the government, as far as the information that needs to be on there. You need to know the location of the manufacturer. You also, you know, kind of down at the bottom, there's going to be the size of the liquid or the weight of the bottle. And on the back in itty bitty teeny tiny letters that absolutely nobody could read almost without glasses, it's going to be this list of ingredients that are inside of this bottle. Now, all of these label designs, I don't really think about all that often, but when you really take a moment to look at labels, you start to realize I instinctively knew that the word shampoo is going to be about 2/3 of the way down the bottle label. And I knew that because most of the time, that's exactly where that information is placed on most labels. It isn't done just for convenience. It's actually done because it's regulated that way. Those ingredients have to be on every single solitary bottle. I'm pretty sure that designers would rather put other things there. But because the government says, you know, people need to know what products they're using on their body, you must write down on the list of ingredients what you've used to create that product. So those label designs are partially dictated by the government, but they're also dictated by other things. And one of them would be the order of the information that you're presenting and your users. Your user is the person who's actually reading the label most of the time, or at least who it's designed for. Another example of a similar type of thing would be, you know, your hot water. Obviously, I was in the shower, so we're using the shower this morning. When you turn a handle to the left, you generally expect to get hot water. It's a little bit frustrating when somebody's, you know, put in the little pieces backwards and you get cold water. So that's because usually when you turn the handle to the left, you get hot water. When you turn it to the right, you generally expect to get cold water. Or if you're facing the handles at the sink, you expect the one on the left to be hot, the one on the right to be cold. But because this isn't always the case, a lot of times you will now see little fire and snowflake symbols, or you will see a little red ring and a blue ring. Those things are used to identify which one's hot and which one's cold. So now that we have great, beautiful, fancy faucets that also move front and back, generally back is hot, front is cold. But again, you know, somebody can put that in backwards, or maybe it doesn't really work that way. And if you live there, you get used to it. But if you don't live there, or if you're only using the sink this one time, you want to get it right more often than not. So these kinds of things are actually regulated by safety standards. And the safety standards say lots of different things. Another thing that they say is that your hot water can only be a certain temperature. It can only go up to a certain temperature. And I actually looked this up. The safety standard for that is 2012 IPC 424.3. Now, I don't know anything really about this IPC. I don't really know much about where this comes from or who designs it. But what I do know is on there, it identifies what the maximum water temperature needs to be. And it's a very long document. It's very wordy, talks about a lot of different things, and it talks about why and how to test for the water and what the range is that would be acceptable for a product to be accepted and things like that. Now, if you ask your mom why the temperature only goes so hot, she's going to tell you something like it's done that way to avoid burns, which is true. But your mom doesn't write safety standards. And so the actual truth is behind those safety standards, there's a lot of other things that go into it. Like, they don't want the temperature to be too hot to avoid plastic parts from melting or getting too soft, because then that's going to cause the product to fail. Another thing is that the government actually regulates some of these safety standards, because there's certain temperatures where bacteria can grow. And so you don't want your hot water heater sitting at a temperature where some nasty bacteria is going to grow that, I don't know, could cause a flesh-eating disease or something. Those are really horrible, awful things. And so people who are experts in water temperature and bacteria and biology and all of these things, they come up with these standards and these regulations, and they present them in a way that are also given to manufacturers, somebody who maybe doesn't study the bacteria in water, but they're more interested in creating, say, a shower head, and they tell them, look, keep the temperature from this to this. So then the manufacturer, the person who's building the product, needs to be aware of all of those standards for their products. Now, if something doesn't go well and that manufacturer messes the part up, or maybe it gets too hot or whatever, and somebody ends up getting hurt, now that somebody who is hurt is going back to the manufacturer. But you see, the manufacturer then is going to go back to those safety standards to make sure they met them. And if they did, then those safety standards are going to be adjusted. So I'm telling you all this. It's not like I think you don't know this, but I'm telling you all of this because all those safety standards are actually what are called white papers. White papers are designed to manage some of those legal terms and the long, wordy information that is really important about a hot water heater or about water temperature. It's not like these things are no big deal. They're a really big deal. It's really, really important that manufacturers meet these requirements. But if on your hot water heater, every single solitary requirement for water temperature was listed directly on your hot water heater, you would have pages upon pages upon pages of user manuals for your hot water heater on things you probably, as a user of your hot water heater, are never, ever going to need. So These standards then are produced and published and managed in different locations. And those different locations are not necessarily on your hot water heater. But let's say that we did put them on the hot water heater. Say that every single solitary hot water heater needed to have every standard that was important to building that hot water heater listed on it. Now, as I mentioned, these are pages long. Your hot water heater would no longer be gray. It would actually look more like a newspaper because there would be so much text on there in order to get all of these standards on there. But even more than that, over time, some of those regulations change. So your scientists or whatever may decide, oh my gosh, no, this bacteria can actually grow now at this other temperature and we didn't know that. Or this new bacteria grows at this temperature. So we need to make sure that all hot water heaters stay within this range. Now, a lot of them are still going to meet those requirements, but not all. Some of them that are out, you know, at my house, say, would probably meet that requirement. So if that requirement changes and all of the standards are actually written on my hot water heater, now in order for that manufacturer to comply with the requirements, they would have to come to my house and change the text on my hot water heater to comply with the new standards. And that doesn't happen for obvious reasons. That would be exhausting and a complete waste of resources to go to every single hot water heater that complies with the new requirement to change the wording. What they do is they reference the standard that dictates the hot water temperature in these numbers. So you'll see these big long numbers like the 2012 IPC 242.3 that I was talking about. You'll see a section on your hot water heater with a label that references that. And it's basically saying that standard identifies the range that this hot water heater must meet. So since I just referenced the standard, now if the government decides to change that standard, as long as my hot water heater still meets with that standard, the standard number hasn't changed. So now the government can change that standard as much as they need to, and as long as my hot water heater still meets within those ranges, I am still compliant with that standard. If that standard changes so much that most of the hot water heaters on the market no longer meet that standard, what happens is they have to change that name. They change that standard number to, say, 2021 PC 2.4 point now instead of 0.3, it would be 0.4. And the idea is that this new standard is a little bit more stringent than the old standard. So my hot water heater doesn't necessarily comply with the 0.4 standard. It only complies with the 0.3 standard. This is why it's really, really critical to keep the pieces of information separate from one another. If you start throwing all of your standards onto your labels get ridiculously large. If you forget who the user of your labels are, then you can get overwhelmed and start putting in information that is too much and doesn't really apply. So with a label, your user would be the homeowner. Your user would be the person who's looking at that information in order to get some idea as to how to light the pilot light or what kind of bottle it is that they're looking at. Where's the shampoo? Where's this conditioner? Where's this hair removal? Those labels, they're all there for a reason, but they're also there to only provide very minimal information, again, for the user. So for that reason, all labels are called quick guides, and that information needs to be relatively limited. You need to keep your standards and the extra information separate, and then simply reference it with a number so that when you need to change things or adjust things, you aren't having to go in and replace every single solitary label. Just as the type of information that you put on the label is really, really important, it's also important that you put the order of the information that you're presenting in the proper order. So, for example, I had mentioned that the word shampoo is located about two-thirds of the way down the bottle. Well, I expect it to be there. I expect it to be there because on most bottles of shampoo, that's exactly where it is. Now, if a designer decides to move the shampoo, the word shampoo, say, to the lid, it's going to take me a little bit longer to find it. Now, what happened in a situation like that is basically the designer forgot about the user. The user is the person who's comfortable with the word shampoo being about two-thirds of the way down the bottle. But the designer shifted the focus of the product or the external labels or what have you to be about marketing, to shifted the user, and didn't really think about who is the user of this label. And so they put it on the lid, which may be a really cool marketing thing because it looks a little bit different, may draw more attention, but it's shifted the purpose of that label from the user, who's the person who's looking for the word shampoo, from the common location that it would be located. So where this information is presented is almost as important as what information is presented. I could give a number of examples for writing long papers and things that identify, you know, you've always got to have an abstract and it's at the beginning of the paper and then the conclusion's always at the end. But you also have other pieces of information that go into reports and things like your figure captions and your nomenclatures and your definitions. And those things people generally know where they're supposed to be. When you're looking for that information, you don't want to go digging through the entire document looking for the information. It not only wastes time, but if you're dealing with something like somebody with shampoo in their hair, it might actually be a safety issue. So when you're creating a white paper or creating a label or even if you're creating a report, it's important to consider the order and the position and the location of some of the information that you're providing. Again, my name is Amber. I'm the owner of Draft Up. That's draft-up.com. I'd love to hear from you if you'd like to get in touch. Talk to you guys later. Bye.